Welcome to Circle of Three, a guided conversation between two friends and colleagues with an invitation to you, our listener, to step into the circle with us. I'm Bonnie Loewen, a spiritual guide who tends to different types of circles and retreats with the hope of creating safe and healing ways to gather.
And I'm Catherine Cherwick. I'm a certified executive coach, and I love having conversations that are curious, that surprise me. Well, why don't we start season two?
I often hear the late Mary Oliver whisper in my ear. And in that conversation about choosing our third voice for season two, I suggested a poem that's been my good company for over 20 years. Wild Geese is perfect for this time of change and uncertainty, and it often comes up in our conversations. When I think about that, I wish we had recorded some of those.
I know. We always say that, and we should have. And in those conversations, you know, we've noticed how the words of Mary Oliver speak into our own longing to belong. Mm-hmm. And at the tail end of a pandemic, in the center of a lot of animosity in communities worldwide, I think the quest for belonging feels essential. Maybe it always is, but So I want to welcome in our listeners. Bonnie and I want to have this conversation with each other and also with you. We will follow the same pattern as season one, inspired by a poem, a reflection, and then a guided conversation. Let's begin.
Wild geese. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and the deep trees, the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese, high in the clean blue air, are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese. Harsh and exciting, over and over, announcing your place in the family of things.
And so in today's episode, we reflect on these words. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves.
30 years ago, my 2-year-old daughter and my 28-year-old self attended an extended family gathering in Rose Nort, my childhood town in southwestern Manitoba. We walked into the gymnasium, attached to the school of my elementary days. Close to 100 people filled up the gym. Rows of chairs lined up facing a podium, like we were waiting a concert. Following everyone else's lead, my daughter and I walked around the edges of the gym, combing over the walls where a family tree grew into branch upon branch, meticulously laid out on a roll of paper. Hand in hand, my daughter and I walked past the Lowen Craker Mennonite roots, traveling back into the 1850s, roots from Holland, which for a brief time were transplanted into Russian soil. We walked past the branches that brought us to Canada. By this time, I had a squirming 2-year-old in my arms. "Almost done," I said. And then I whispered a gasp. Me, a single branch that had, on its own, sprouted a child. I put Kira down. I looked around the room. For what? I'm not sure. Maybe the truth? By the time I was 28, I had been married twice, and in the midst of going through my second divorce. I had a dynamic branch with family tree symbols of union, separation, growth. In this gymnasium, that story had been pruned to nothing. After the walk around, we were invited to sit in these rows of chairs. We sang hymns and then listened to Reverend Lowen, my great uncle. For 30 minutes, he picked through the Bible, verse by verse, substantiating the goodness of family mirrored in the Lowen Craker clan. The goodness of many marriages. He didn't have to say heterosexual. The goodness in the abundance of children. The goodness that shows itself in hard work. And most importantly, the goodness of hardworking husbands and wives and their abundant children staying together. Between my daughter's 2-year-old drive to explore and my desire to scream out, I have been walking for more than 100 miles on my knees repenting, she and I left the gym and explored the hallways. The next day, we returned home to Saskatoon. I turned back to the week where I worked full-time while my daughter went to daycare. And Friday night came, and I was legally obligated to drop her off at her dad's for the weekend. All the while, I weaved in a few meetings with my lawyer since I was fighting for full custody and for the freedom to move back to Manitoba where I had more family and support. It was a Friday afternoon when I met with my lawyer, and she handed me an envelope, the legal agreement for custody. In black and white, it screamed, "Joint." That's about all I could read for a while. In the small print, I was allowed to move to Manitoba, but Kira's dad would have 4 to 5 days of access every month, and if he lived in a different city, he would have to do the driving. Try as I might to see the silver lining in all of this, I couldn't. All I could see was my devastation, my failure. I failed to protect her from a man who suffered from violent outbursts, from erratic, dangerous behaviors, and from a mental illness that had become relentless. My empty Saturday morning came, and Kira was with her dad for the weekend. I could collapse into self-pity in my sad little apartment, or I could take my self-pity with me somewhere. I chose the latter. I packed a backpack full of my favorite things, a book, Rudy Weeb's Peace Shall Destroy Many, a journal and a pen, and snacks. I headed out of the city. And I can't remember which direction, but I know by the time I had cycled for a few hours, I was climbing up and soaring down rolling hills. I stopped at a small park, where at the edge of a valley was a bench. I sat there, looking out. You only need to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. I had begun, without my knowing, to let the soft animal of my body love what it loves. I made a claim that day on 3 things that would feed me for the next 30 years. 1, ride a bike, hike a path, play volleyball, tend to your garden, go for a swim, remember your yoga, be my physical self every day. 2, always have a story close by that carries me away and into my own at the same time. And 3, find beautiful journals and perfect pens to write what I see, what I know, and just maybe I'll hear what I long forgot. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting. You only need to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves.
Oh, Bonnie, thank you so much for that. So many emotions and what a journey that you've been through. What did you once believe it meant to be good?
Wow. Okay. It meant to do what other people told me to do. Mm-hmm. And then beyond that, those other people linked themselves to big books or big buildings, or in my childhood, the big church that was my home as a little girl. The big book that was my storybook as a little girl, which was the Bible. And I'm not saying that there weren't any life-giving, wholehearted moments in all of that, but it became a measure for good that was outside of myself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is it always explicitly someone telling you what is good and what is bad? Or, you know, is it something else?
Well, I think sometimes there's a feeling inside of us between our minds and our bodies. And our minds hold the list of the good that's kind of gotten like lodged in there. And we've made them permanent. And our bodies hold something that's much more fluid and in the moment. And mm-hmm. when we separate that, that's when we feel out of balance.
Mm-hmm. Running the narrative.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Someone else's narrative often.
Yeah.
That's been implanted.
Or in those moments when you were moving towards good, what were you moving away from?
Not belonging. Fearing that I wouldn't belong. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a 1-year-old granddaughter, Quinn, and she doesn't have language that comes out of her head, really, at this stage. Her language all comes out of her body. But you can see in every effort that she has to communicate, which she does a lot. Like an example would be this. Just yesterday, she and her mom, Julie, went out to collect the eggs. And the chickens are new on our yard. So it was her first time that she had ever collected eggs. And when she came in, immediately she looked to every person in the room, gathered her audience of belonging, and started to act like a chicken. And she squawked her little arms. And then the one word she knew was eggs. And she says it kind of like egg, 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 like that. And she wanted her story of chickens and eggs she wanted to belong. She wanted that to belong in that little web of humans. So.
Can you tell me, I was curious about the word repenting. I've been thinking about that word. How do you interpret it? You said, you know, you felt it in that gymnasium.
Mm-hmm.
What does that word mean to you?
Again, I think there's this split we seem to find in life between our mind and our bodies. And, you know, I remembered in that moment, my body felt broken. My body knew broken. Something broke between the people who wanted to be the nest, to be the family, to be the union for little baby Kira. That broke. And heavens, I knew it from my head to my toes. Just saying that's enough. Like the body holds the brokenness enough. But then to have your external forces kind of hammering out in their belief system that not only are you broken inside, but because of what you've done, the mistakes you've made, you're now separated from the people you want to belong with. That's a brokenness that gets so amped up that it holds repent in it. And now you're on your knees crawling through a desert about stuff that's theirs, not yours. And you already have enough broken.
Hmm. What would I have seen? What kinds of things? What does that look like at the time? Hmm. Yeah, I think it's interesting.
I think what happens is you start throwing up some walls. If you're in touch with that broken body, all of a sudden little walls get put up. And no, I'm not going to go talk to my aunt. And no, I'm not going to sit next to my dad right now. And no, I'm, even though all of those people wanted to show love to me, it was a confused love. So I started throwing walls up. And I started just wanting to be separate. And I wanted to curl up somewhere else.
Yeah, I've done that too. That makes me think of some examples in my life were the walls. But I also then remember in those moments, it made me think, I've also started to overcompensate and move towards. Like, oh, well, how can I make this better?
Yeah, I guess either we throw up walls or what I'm hearing you say, we start performing and we step up on that little podium we spoke about.
Yeah.
Both are pretty exhausting, by the way.
And both keep us stuck. So then when you moved through that, and I heard the journey of when you decided to get on your bike and move.
There's one other thing that you woke up in me when you said about the performing. In order to get oneself through all that repenting, I remembered armoring myself up with blame. And I just so wanted everyone to hate the one who had made this all happen. And I vilified the man who was suffering. And I made him into this kind of iconic, abusive man. No, he was a man who was suffering. Yes, that suffering showed itself through abuse, but he was a man also seeking wholeness. And I think we have that sharp force of repent that comes at us through these external words. They forge us into this place of blaming and shaming.
Yeah, the armor is something else, right?
Yeah.
And I've acted out of armor that looked like masks of complete goodness. I'm a good person. I'm a good girl. That's not vilifying. It's more like, no, I'm exactly who you think I am.
Which is so not how I experience you, by the way, Kathy.
Yeah, I'm working on it.
Oh,
I'm a recovering mask wearer.
Huh. And we're all on a journey to be that soft animal.
Yeah, and I'm curious about that soft animal because the word reciprocity comes to me when I think about your story. This idea that giving and receiving. I saw you on your bike with your backpack and your journal and your book and your pens. And I thought of how you received the time you had in order to give yourself something.
That's beautifully said.
But I'm curious about that relationship to reciprocity, you know, to that moment, the journey of those points, what stories come to mind when you think about what led you to that moment?
I think that those three things I chose in that moment, physical activity, a story, and writing my own story, those were all work before the work, if that makes sense. I was gifted story as a little girl. I had my Grandma Johnson. You would never, ever interrupt her 2 o'clock time because she needed to get home for her story. It was General Hospital. Every lineage that I have inside of me is just packed with story. And I wasn't raised academic. I wasn't raised in that kind of a home. I wasn't even raised with like bookshelves full of books. I was raised with coffee, where everybody sat in a circle and paused for the day and gave each other their stories, like Quinn gave us about her eggs and her chickens. And I was raised to know that those tiny little incremental parts of our day, whether it was how the peaches came in from the States that year, to how the carrots are growing, to the man, second year raspberries are the best, or all those little bits that come out in a coffee break. That's what makes our lives. And so I inherited that. My lineage wouldn't call it moving their body. They would just call it work. That's what the day was full of. And maybe where I branched out a bit is I started to value that speaking about it, taking up space to tell what matters in all of that. If I look back, I can see the inheritance lineage there too. I didn't make those three things up. I think my brokenness got me to hear them.
Yeah, and I hear the act of owning your own story, that it matters, that there's some value in taking up the space. I'm actually pretty curious about how you discern now whether or not you're allowing yourself to be defined by others' views of what it means to be good.
If I'm living just out of my ideas or my head, then I'm probably running a narrative that's trying to please something outside of myself. If I'm living exceedingly Bonnie, that means that my body and my spirit are in union. That means I'm living out of the soft animal. Something that's been reminding me about how our wholeness is found is that in every single tender soul who has died in my life, I do not remember them as an idea. I remember them as a body.
Yeah, what's the emotion there when you said that? I'm curious
about
that.
My sister. My sister died 6 years ago. And as I have worked through my grief, let's say, my sadness, my all that letting go, I can feel her generosity about beauty. That's an idea, kind of, right? But really what I see are her hands, her really elegant hands, and I can even feel them. My father, just such a kindness and thoughtfulness. I can see his eyes, and I can see his eyes seeing, and I can see his eyes seeing beyond what he can speak. So we hold our grief, or whatever that is, we hold the eternity of a human being by holding them in their body, in the soft animal that they were or that they are.
The word essence comes to me, which is a feeling with no words around it. And it seems that the body can hold an essence of someone, and the dreams come from there. You know, Mary Oliver, you only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. It sounds as if she's urging us to have the human experience over and over again.
Mary Oliver's anthology of writing never, ever stops waking me up. And her ability to have us see our soft animal, you know, through watching a grasshopper prey, or a deer and a dog have some kind of respectful exchange. Oh, I don't know, I could go on. She never stops with that. When we can be the soft animal that we are, it seems as if we wake up to our connectedness and then we no longer feel alone.
Oh, Bonnie, that was truly, I'm very grateful. We turn to our listeners now, to you. Thank you for stepping into this circle with us.
And before we leave this conversation and the first edition of our second season of Circle of Three, we'd like to thank our team.
Recording and mastering, Madeline Roger. Theme music by Rain Hamilton. Editing and production oversight by Kate Friesen, The Story Source.
You can subscribe to this podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and more. I'm Bonnie Lowen.
And I'm Catherine Cherowick. Till our next Circle of Three.
If you think of a friend who would engage in this conversation, welcome to pass it along. Other reflections, writings, and retreats are found on my website, beingbeloved.ca.